Okay, hi everybody. Welcome along to our review class on karma. So I've had 8 weeks of teachings on this, so I see there's a number of new faces in the room, so it might be a little confusing. If you are confused, please just raise your hand and I'll try and help as best I can. And welcome to those people online. So we begin as we normally do by doing a short breathing meditation. Then we will take refuge together and say a few prayers, and then we'll begin the class. So please get comfortable in your seat. This just means that your back is straight and your shoulders relaxed and you feel at ease. And when you're sitting comfortably, allow the body to breathe itself. And the body will find this easy to do. It does it every night when you hop into bed and go to sleep. So allow the body to breathe itself and for you to relax and be at ease. And while you breathe normally and naturally, become aware of the movements that the body makes each time you inhale or exhale. In this way, you can focus the mind while the body remains relaxed. So with the mind focused and the body relaxed, it becomes easy to imagine the presence of all the enlightened beings in the space above you. It's also easy to imagine that you're surrounded by every living being. So while you are in the presence of the enlightened beings and you're surrounded by all sentient beings, take a moment to consider what you wish to do while you're in the presence of all living beings and all enlightened beings. Now, whatever purpose you've set for yourself, just consider that up to the present, you've never been content with the happiness you have. And you've always wanted to be free from any form of suffering you've experienced. And right up until this very moment, neither of these two wishes have been accomplished. Now, the enlightened beings in the space above you have accomplished those two aspirations. They have freed themselves from suffering and its causes, and their happiness is one of stability. And have the power to help others do the same, free themselves from suffering and bring about all the forms of happiness that are stable and long-lasting. So add to your purpose for being here a wish to develop wisdom and compassion and skill so that you can put an end to the causes of your own suffering and help others do the same, and thereby deliver yourself and others into the state of permanent and stable happiness called enlightenment. So to actualize this wish, we will take refuge in the enlightened ones in the space in front of us. So recite along with me. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So in response to this wish of ours, lights and nectars pour from the heart of the Buddha, and they wash over you, and they remove the causes of suffering, and they reveal your full potential to become awakened. You gaze around yourself, you see others, all sentient beings, are still experiencing suffering. You recollect the kindness they've extended to you in this life and throughout beginningless lives. And you make a wish that all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And again, in response to this aspiration, lights and nectars pour from the heart of the Buddha. They wash over you and over all the beings surrounding you. And all forms of anger, hatred, and aversion are washed away. You find yourself established in a state of equanimity, along with everyone else. And in the state of equanimity, you recite, reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So we've done something good, something virtuous, and to separate ourselves from the clinging to it, we imagine that the whole universe transforms into a wonderful, pure land, and then we offer this to the enlightened beings in front of us. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. So we release the offering, and the Buddha accepts it, and he looks down at us with delight. He smiles at us, and we look up into his eyes. And looking into his eyes, we feel accepted and at ease. And then an emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart. And it moves through space and comes to abide above the crown of your head, facing in the same direction you are. And this emanation descends, entering the crown of your head, coming down through your body, and comes to rest at the level of your heart. And then its radiance begins to expand, filling your body and mind with light. And the light goes out through the pores of your skin and begins to fill the 10 directions of space. And wherever there are living beings which occupy space, they are touched by that light and utterly transformed, reappearing in the fully awakened state. And there's no difference between them and yourself. fact, ideas of self and them and inner and outer completely vanish. You just rest in this vast equanimity. And from the 10 directions of space, the light begins to withdraw and it re-enters your heart. And you can feel your feet on the floor and your bottom on the seat. And you know that you're breathing normally and naturally. And that this meditation exercise was one of imagination. And it's placed upon your mind an imprint for its actuality to take place. I think that you've put into place one of the causes to become enlightened. And feel grateful and gratitude for that. And then breathe in deeply through your nostrils and exhale through your mouth. If your eyes are closed, allow them to flutter open now. And move your body in whichever way you'd like to until you're once again quite comfortable and at ease in your seat. So this is class 9, isn't it? So we've done 8 classes before, and this is some of the material we've covered. So we looked at the 4 principles of karma. We looked at non-virtuous paths, the 3 of body, speech, 3 of body, 4 of speech, and 3 of mind that make up the 10 non-virtuous paths. Then we looked at the paths of restraint. So they were like the 3 skillful or virtuous paths of the body, the 4 of speech, and the 3 of the mind. We looked at how when we do an action, and the action finishes, it can leave a seed or a potential for some effect to take place. It also imprints the mind so that things appear truly existent to us, when in fact they're not. We also, some of these seeds can produce the effect of throwing us into a new rebirth, a different type of rebirth when we pass away from this life. And when we find ourselves reborn, there are types of actions that complete the lifespan that we live. And it's important that while we are alive to engage in the practice of purification, so that the seeds of our unskillful actions do not ripen at the time of death and throw us into an unfortunate rebirth. And what we're going to do is basically touch on some of these topics again tonight, because we'll be going through mostly this review process. And this is some of the material that I've been relying upon. So I wanted to start off with a book right down the bottom there, the very black covered book called Karma by Trolling Rinpoche.
What is karma, what it isn't, and why it matters?
Yes, okay. So very well written and easy to read, easy to understand. What's terrific about it gives you a historical overview of the idea of karma and how it's changed throughout the centuries, and how a radical change took place when the Buddha came across this idea of karma. The book next to it, called Vajrasattva Meditation, and the other one called Everlasting Rain of Nectar up on the top there, these books deal specifically with purification practices. And the other 4 books, the 4 Noble Truths, Samsara Nirvana, Steps, and Buddhism, are dealing with the whole topic of this teaching on karma. And in these books here called Buddhism, The Foundation of Buddhist Practice, and Samsara, Nirvana, and Buddha Nature, are 3 books of a series written by His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Venerable Thupten Chodron that I highly recommend. They're easy to read, they're deep, and they're vast, and you'll keep going back to them. And they cover subjects that you often don't come across. But today we're going to have a look, mostly we're going to do an overview, and in particular we're going to answer 6 assessment questions. Now in total there were like 33, 39, 33, 39 questions altogether. There are three different types of exam for this course. And we've covered all of them in the 8 weeks, but today let's just do six. So we're going to begin with the first question, which is, why is understanding karma so important? So that picture there might give you a clue.
Decrease happiness. Decrease unhappiness.
Yes, that's certainly part of it. We want to decrease our suffering and increase our happiness. And like I said, there's none of us that wish for any form of suffering, not even the slightest form, but all of us wish to be happy. We don't have enough of it. So why haven't our aspirations been met? Well, we don't want suffering and we do want happiness.
Why haven't they been met?
Yeah.
We're operating out of this.
Okay. Anyone else?
We're doing the things that we think bring happiness, but they don't actually bring happiness.
Yep,
so we've just true. Misidentified
the causes for happiness.
Yeah.
So we all know what suffering is, that at some level, at least we know what the obvious types of suffering are. And we probably, most of us, can become familiar with this other concept called the suffering of change. And there's an even deeper form of suffering called the suffering of all pervasive conditionality. That's a little bit difficult to get your head around. And when you sort of study that or learn about it, become familiar with it, we'll all agree that we don't want those forms of suffering. We don't want the three forms of suffering. We don't want the six. We don't want the eight. We don't want the 25. None of them. And when we look at them, what we're looking at is the effect, the result, right? And none of us want them. So it's interesting how we don't want the effect, but we keep doing the cause. We have no, our mind, it strongly goes no, no, no for the effect, but it doesn't go strongly no, no, no for the cause. So we keep getting the effect. So we sort of work against ourselves in other ways. In other words, this is like this lovely term we use, like called ignorance. It's an ignorance where you sort of think one thing, but you're actually wrong. And you keep going that way. So you don't get the effects you want. So like we all want to be happy, and that happiness, we're always like, again, we're focused on the result. But then we don't actually do the causes. So we don't do the causes of the result we want, and for the result we don't want, we do the causes.
So is it like we want to be happy, but we just keep on thinking about how much we hate somebody, and then just
well, that's
get
an
more
example
and more
of
miserable?
It. That's an example of it, yeah. Yes, that would be an example. So in brief, why understanding karma is so important. It does this, right? It explains how experiences of pain and suffering arise as the result of the negative actions. And this is where we've got to sort of put our, we've got to focus on. Because we don't require any focus for the effect of suffering. We immediately don't know, no, I don't, it's just not what I want. But for what actually causes it, that's something that sort of slips out of our mind often. We're not really sort of familiar with it. And in terms of our happiness, right, it also explains how desirable experiences of happiness and joy arise as a result of the positive actions, emotions and thoughts. So if we want to be happy, as we all do, we've got to emphasize what causes it. And if we wish to be free from suffering, the emphasis has got to be on what do we need to avoid. Brings us to the final point, that all of our experiences come from causes and conditions which correspond to their result. The other thing that might slip our minds is that when we experience either happiness or suffering in this life, many of the causes and conditions that bring about could have come from previous lives, so they're not obvious to us. You know, so you might have heard that question, and I've written a book about it, why do bad things happen to good people? Because if you don't know, if you can't answer it, like the life seems very unfair, doesn't it? If you or your children or your parents have been really good people, and yet these terrible things are happening to them. Like, well, what's going on here? So an understanding of karma and its effects, the cause of karma and the effect that it produces, could have a very important effect on the choices you make, what you decide to do and how you do it. So as Holiness says, instead of putting energy into overcoming adversaries and competing with our rivals, we will choose to cultivate cooperation, tolerance, and forgiveness once you have some idea of understanding how karma, cause, and effect work. Because the one thing you could be assured of, and this is what karma, cause, and effect is, the importance of it, is that when it's sort of saying that when we create a negative action, an unskillful action, an action that causes suffering in some way, we can be assured of one person who's going to experience it. And that's us. And it's the same sort of thing when it comes to the happiness. So many of us, we try and help people, sometimes it's not appreciated. It doesn't make them happy. We think that what we're doing should. So the thing to realize is that the one person you can be sure of who's going to make it happy is you. So once again, it's quite interesting, isn't it? You know, we want to hurt somebody, but the person we actually hurt is ourselves. We want to help somebody, but the actual person we really help is ourselves. Because we're the actors, we're the creators of the karma. So I was talking about one of our friends last night. We were talking about a world view. And that's just the way of looking at the world and your thoughts about it. And the Buddhist worldview goes completely opposite to the normal view we have of in the world. And this karma is showing that it's sort of part of that. You've got to change your way of looking at things. And so this way it's very, very important, because like I said, we all want to be happy and none of us wishes to experience even the slightest suffering. Yet we keep creating causes for our suffering, and we seem to abstain from or retreat from the causes that actually produce happiness for ourselves. So these are just three sort of reasons to support this idea of karma being very important. So now karma has got a number of different meanings. And so probably the one that we're most familiar with would be, it just means action in general, just an action. But then you can ask all sorts of questions about action. What is it? Is it, you know, we can talk about physical actions, mental actions, verbal actions. And what we mean by action in the Buddha Dharma is really the action of intention, an intention to act, or an action that goes all, sorry, an intention that goes along with an act. So we've got an intention that is there before we act, and then when we act, there's an intention that goes along with the action. And sometimes those two intentions are different. So when we create an action, just like anything that does exist, it's made up of parts. And when these parts are explained to us from a Buddhist teacher, they can explain it in different ways. So the simplest ways of explaining it is just three parts. You have a beginning, you have a middle, and an end. And this It's like any action, it's always that way. Then you can sort of break it up even finer. And you can say, so what was in the beginning and what's in the middle and how many parts are in each of these parts? So I'll just show you some of the ways of how a path is created. So this is the simplest one. You start off with an intention, then the action is created, and then the action finishes. And there's a sense of satisfaction that action is finished. And in the intention can be broken up again, and so can the action. So here we can see the intention has a basis and an attitude. And the action has just got the performance, and then finally at the end, it's just called culmination. So here in this first one here, we can have a look at the basis being, so there's going to be an action, right? So this is all like actions. So the basis is, who's the act on?
Or towards.
Who's the act towards in this one? So often a sentient being, a living being. So that's the basis. Then within the attitude, it's made up of three parts. It's got to be the right person that you're aiming at. Right? So it might be the fact that I want to hurt Miffy, but I actually hurt Ian. Right? So it's not a complete action.
You chucked a tissue at me, but it goes to Ian.
That's right, yeah. And I wanted to, what could I say? It came out of resentment, so I wanted to hurt Miffy. That was my attitude. But then it got to Ian, and Ian started laughing. So now the action's a little bit messed up. And then, and not only that, but the action has got, like, I've got to throw the paper. So it's an action of performance. I'm performing a physical action. And there's a motivation for doing it. And then, of course, at the end, it's like, so I missed Miffy. So, I can't rejoice in that because I actually missed her. I got Ian instead. So all these parts, they're all changeable like that. So when you create a complete negative action, all the parts have to be in place. I've got to want to hit Miffy, I intend to do it, I actually perform it, it actually hits Miffy, and I'm glad it did. And that's a complete action. When it's not like that, it's still an action, but it's incomplete. All the parts aren't in place to produce a full effect of a rebirth. It'll produce an effect if I hit Ian and Ian laughs, so I have to laugh because he's laughing too. It's still an effect that I've produced for myself, but it's not the original effect, some other effect. And it culminates. So these are probably the most two common ways. If you go to teachers and you have a Tibetan Lama in particular talk about it, it's usually this way. And especially if they look around and see, a lot of new people in the room, they'll just do the first three, because it's simple. So you can do it like that, three, four, but then you can also do it in five, and there's also a way of doing it in six parts. Just depending upon how deep you want to go into things. So here, the basis once again, it's the object of the sentient being. The perception, you have to recognize it's the right person, the attitude contains the motivation. There's an affliction in it. So you can see it's even broken up a bit more. Whereas before, the attitude contained the perception and the affliction, now it's broken up into separate parts.
Yeah, because you might be, under the sway of really strong affliction, so you're not even in control of your mind.
And this way of explaining, so you can look at what they call non-virtuous actions, non-virtuous karma, karmas that create suffering, in other words, virtuous karmas, actions that create happiness, and neutral actions. So three forms of action, you can always divide it up into these ways, three, four, five, six parts. It's just to sort of help us in a way to get into it in more depth and see the nuances of karmic action. Which leads us to this great quote by Arya Nagarjuna. So he was known as one of the second Buddha. So he says, from non-virtues come all sufferings and likewise all bad transmigrations. So what he's sort of saying here is that rebirth states that are bad, lower realm rebirth states, they come from non-virtue. But even when we find ourselves in a higher rebirth and we experience suffering, that's from the non-virtue. So here we are as human beings, we're not in the lower realms, yet we experience suffering. So you go, why? It's just from the non-virtuous actions you created in previous lives. He says, from virtues, all happy transmigrations. Well, here we are. We obviously living as human beings with a leisure and opportunity to engage in this practice. It's come from virtue. And we experience pleasures and happiness in this life. And that's also from virtue. We're going to talk now about the karmas that produce rebirth states. So we're experiencing a rebirth state now, and it's called the rebirth state of a human being. You'll know that there's some dogs and cats and porpoises, all sorts of animals out there. They all experience the rebirth state of an animal. And that animal is called the rebirth state of a lower realm being. It's called lower realms because the suffering is more intense and it's much harder to become enlightened from there. So what produces that? What actually, how do you end up as a human being and as an animal? So we call it karma, but it's a particular type of karma. So in terms of the effect, it's called a good karma, right? Because here we are, we've got a chance to decrease our suffering, increase our happiness, become, put in place all the causes for another higher realm rebirth. Produce liberation for ourselves or even enlightenment. Now, animals can't do that while they're in the animal body. And many of the other beings can't do it. That's what I often say, to be a human being is the best, especially if you have the leisure and opportunity to practice Dharma. So this karma that produces the effect is called a throwing karma. And it is the cause of the particular rebirth. There is another term they use for it, it's called projecting karma. So projecting and throwing are the same thing, they just use different terms. So the example, like this, right? So here we've got a picture of a hand or a person, and what he's got in his hand, what he's released are these seeds. Right? So he throws them into the ground. Land the ground, and they meet the right conditions. If they meet the ground is fertile, if it meets water, sunshine, all these things, it'll grow up into a plant. What sort of plant will it be? Well, it'll be a plant that's like seed, right?
Depends on the seed.
Depends on the seed, isn't it?
It's a mixed bunch of seeds.
That's right. It's a mixed bunch. Now, for that plant or flower to come up, it definitely required that seed, doesn't it? It's not going to happen without that seed. But just having the seed will not do it, will it? Because you can have that seed and put it in a packet, keep it in the cupboard. There's no plant's going to be produced from that. It's actually going to be like thrown into the ground, put in. So that putting in, that activity, yeah, the planting of it is called the throwing karma. When the plant comes up, it's called the fruition karma. It's brought its fruit about. So here we've all experienced the fruition karma of being a human being in this realm. That's our fruitional karma. So what produced that? We say, well, we had the potential for that to take place. That's called the seed. But why? Okay, we've got the potential, but like, how did it come to be what we are? But this is the thing called the throwing karma. So throwing karma ripens in rebirth in a samsaric realm. the five aggregates of a desire realm, which we have, or the four in the form realms and so forth. Now, for this to take place, all those parts of the action we talked about before, the three or four or five, they've all got to be in place. And they've all got to be of sufficient strength and power to produce that result. Because they can all be in place, but if they're not strong enough, you don't get this result. So what's the cause of the throwing? Yeah, what type of mind? Yeah, it's ignorance. Ignorance is the thing that throws it. It's the first link. Yeah. Second link is the karma, right? So there you go. So the root motivation of throwing karma is ignorance, which drives the positive or negative actions of body, speech, and mind. So the second moment of that action is transferred into a karmic imprint in the consciousness. And this karmic imprint is then matured by the links of craving, grasping, and existence in terms of the 12 links, so it's 8, 9, and 10. And that brings the ripening effect of that karmic imprint.
Which is the fruitional, is it?
Yeah, when it finally comes to fruition. So Yangtze Rinpoche says, since we have a lot of karmic imprints, because we've done all sorts of, we've acted and acted and acted. In fact, when I read the function of the sentient...
Oh, yeah.
What is the function of a sentient being? The answer is to act. And so I remember many years ago, before I knew anything about this, I try not to act. Try not to do anything, but you can't, right? Even just the idea of saying, try not, it's like, well, that's an action, isn't it? You're trying something, you're acting.
It's going, actually, wow. Even in Western science, that's the difference between a plant and an animal, for instance, is one can act, the other can't.
Yeah, also the Buddhists, that's what they define the sentient being, the function of them is to act. But like I said, we all want to be happy, but our actions don't actually create what we actually want. They do us the opposite. So again, Jung Sil saying, since we have a lot of karmic imprints, the question of which karmic imprint will be ripened is determined by whichever is the heaviest karma in the mind, negative or positive. So this is particularly talking at the time of death, right? So I've got a lot of imprints on our mind. Imagine you're lying there, you're about to die. You're going to say, but where will I be born? What's going to determine that? So you say, well, while you remain conscious, the last imprint, which one? So they give you different sort of answers. So one they say is the heaviest one in the mind.
So does that mean one that's playing on your conscience?
Yeah, that's right. Oftentimes, sometimes you can be quite concerned about how you'll die. And then you sort of think, I don't know what my mind is going to be doing. Even when I sort of like go unconscious, my mind is still working. But here what it's sort of saying is, yep, that's true. You don't need to worry about that. It's like the states while you're sort of conscious, because there's where your really strongest intentions are to move the seeds and so forth. Because if the negative and positive are equal, then whichever is credit first will be the one to ripen, the credit. And blah blah blah. So there's a number of different, you've got four or five different positions here. It's highly dependent. And of course, so the throwing karma comes in, it propels you into this rebirth state, and you come, it comes to fruition, just like the seed brings out its fruit. Same to us, right? So here we are, our fruition has been, we've been thrown into this realm as a human being, which is tremendous, up to a point. And so then we think, okay, so then what happens is, well, then completing karma plays its part. So you are saying that, so when I I was going to throw the paper at Miffy, but then I missed it, hit the end, and all these things weren't in place, right? So that's not enough to bring about a fruitional karma. It doesn't have the power to be a throwing karma. But it's got enough going on there to make it a completing karma. So many of the actions, especially the virtuous ones we do, they're never really, they're not, often don't have all four parts in place. So that's why I think Rupa showed so much effort into telling us intention, 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 because intention is the karma. You know, so often we do pujas here. And we say, okay, so at the very end, we're going to dedicate the merit. So the merit is what's been created because we've done all these actions. But so merit is another strong relationship with karma. We call it meritorious karma. We've done all this activity. Now we're about to go, okay, now I'm going to send it off. So what do people do? So what are you going to dedicate for? You know what some people say? In fact, a lot of people say. What did you tell them?
Yeah, good health.
May we have good health.
Harmony in relationships. Yeah,
harmony in relationships. May the birth of someone's baby go smoothly. So those are all actions, aren't they, when you dedicate like that? Okay. What's the intention?
What's the what?
What's the intention when you say that?
Happiness and samsara.
Happiness, that's exactly right, Ian. Happiness and samsara.
Well, it's not even that. It's just like happiness this week or this year.
This life, but that's samsaric life. There's so many dedications to doing it. What are you dedicating for? So people remain in samsara. Now that's crazy. Well, it's not too, you know, it's a bit strong. But, you know, it's like just saying, yeah, well, may this bring you more suffering. May you have a long life. May you be born and have good health so you can age and go through all the sufferings of this and then die and go do it again. So it's like I sort of said before about this idea of not understanding karma.
Yeah, so it's caring, but it's
it
doesn't understand the actual causes of the ill health
Well, I guess it's going for result, isn't it? May you have a long life. Yeah, okay. I think, well, it could be a good thing to have a long life. Who knows? It could be good, could be bad. You never know in samsara. All you know is it's suffering.
So,
my intention was... No, that's not a throwing karma. All the parts have to be complete.
Yeah. And because also you would have gone, oh, whoops, I didn't mean to do that to Ian, I meant to do that
so
to
once Ian. Again.
So you don't have my intention.
Yeah, but not Ian. Was it to hurt Ian? It was to hurt Miffy. And then it didn't hurt Miffy. So intentions, it's not enough just to be intentional. You have plenty of intentions, but that's part of it. But then there's the rest. Basically, every action is made up of 3, 4, 5 parts. Intentions is never a single thing.
But it's not a full karma.
Yeah. And it can't produce the fruitional result of the rebirth. Yeah, because this, now you've fulfilled one another part of the action. Yeah, so the more you can decrease the parts, the better for you when it comes to negativity. But you want as many parts as possible fulfilled in terms of virtue because it's going to create greater happiness for you.
Yeah, so you want to have a complete action with virtue too, have everything.
So when I was saying about the spirit, you know, the pujas and the we dedicate, it might just be a thing of, you know, Western culture that we're a little bit shy or embarrassed or feel a little bit funny about saying, bring about enlightenment for all sentient beings.
Yeah, because it depends us. So what is the best thing to dedicate for a being to reach enlightenment? Is that the best?
Well, the thing is, the being you want to reach enlightenment is you.
So don't be
bad. Why do you want to achieve enlightenment for the other? You want to say it because this is the very best intention you could possibly have. you've got the greatest result. And even if you don't get that result, it's the best intention, it's all good.
Yeah, so that's also like in the dedications, sometimes people will say, you know, I hope so-and-so regains their health and doesn't suffer too much. What kind of dedication is that? Yeah. Oh, you know, Deborah, may you have only 30% suffering? Like,
because we like you.
So
right.
Again, it's like, there is a bashfulness about what to dedicate for.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't know if it's cultural or if it's just, it takes a lot of courage to dedicate for enlightenment. Because we have to have then the conviction that it's impossible.
It's possible. That's right. So this is the thing. Once you see it's possible, that suffering doesn't truly exist. See, this is anything that does exist does so dependently. So if you think about that, then it's just like, well, if I had all the causes and conditions in place, then the result comes about, doesn't it? Yep, that's right. So if the result I'm seeking is Buddhahood, I have all the causes and conditions in place, become a Buddha, you go, yep. This is the whole thing about, you know, karma, cause and effect. Karma, cause and effect. So we should be aiming for the best effects we could possibly wish for and wish that others experience the same thing, because there's no difference between you and I. You know? So you say, so what's the greatest form of happiness you could ever have? I say, well, enlightenment. Is it possible? Yeah. Well, why don't I wish for that then? Why aim for something that's less than that? Why even dedicate to have more suffering in psychic existence? That's outrageous. So I think we've got to sort of lift the game a bit. Really, you know, remember what we're capable of. And so, you know, the other thing we're saying, somebody say enlightenment, you go, oh, I'm not going to get enlightened in this life. So, well, you might not, but this life, every life, while you're a samsaric being, will come to an end. Right? You're not aiming just for this life, you're aiming for like throughout countless lifetimes. That's my goal. I'm going there. And who am I doing it for? Well, for you. I hope somebody will listen to this and go, well, yeah, that's right. You know, next time I dedicate, I'm going to do it to become enlightened for their sake. May this day, whatever I've done this puja, bring about enlightenment for the benefit of others. It's so simple to say.
And enlightenment.
So there's another thing. So, you know, Geshe's warned about this too. He said, so when we make the wish that another person become enlightened, you know, is that the mind of enlightenment? Is that bodhicitta? Yeah, no. It's not. Bodhicitta is, may I become enlightened for your sake, for you.
To help you.
To help you. So again, we sort of chop a leg off our practice and sort of hobble along and hope everything will work out right. So think about it anyway. Like I said, if you feel a little bit bashful about it, well, tackle it.
Well, it's kind of like if athletes are aiming for the Olympics and they go, oh, I'm going to the Olympics, but I'm not going to win any medals. It's like, well, why are you going to, you know, compete in the Olympics then? But most athletes say, if I don't get medals this time, there's the next Olympics 4 years on, like they're aiming for it.
Yeah, and they're always aiming to be the first. You know, no one's aiming to get third. You know, you try and get the top, but if you don't get, you get silver or bronze, well, fantastic. And then even if you don't get that, you just go, I got to the Olympics. See how many people get to the Olympics and run? Very, very few. But if you just say, I want to end up in the Olympics and run a race, it's, well, it's not, who knows, you know? Yeah. So same here, like aim high, do the best and take whatever comes. Anyway, with this completing karma, right? So, as you can see, it's just like all these conditions. The completing brings about the conditions. So completing karma, what does it do? It determines the desirable or undesirable nature of experience once you're born. So you have the throwing karma, produces the fruition, and then there's the experiences. So you might have like this example here, you've got the seed, it's put into the ground, that's the throwing, and the seed is the potential. It brings about the result of the tree growing up, it's the fruition. Now that tree could have so many leaves, fruit, produce shade, all sorts of different things. Bark could be ruined, so many branches, they're all different, but that's the completion effect. You know, it might not even do that.
Might get all bent because of the wind.
That's right, yeah. It might go along so far and then... That's right, or different illnesses to the tree, all that sort of stuff, right? It's just like us, same sort of thing. Sometimes the results of many completing karmas are experienced in one life. See, someone may be born in a war-torn country because of one non-virtuous completing karma. So the virtuous karma was like human being, but you find yourself in the war-torn country. That's not a good thing. So it's a non-virtuous completing karma. So I'm completing my life in a war-torn country. But nevertheless, while they're there, they receive plenty of shipments of food, medicine, and clothing, which come about from other virtuous completing karmas. It's like I was saying before, many times when you do good things, you don't complete them. Right? So they become throwing karmas or the fruitional karma. They become completing karmas. And they complete the life that you have, you find yourself in.
So if we find ourselves receiving lots of help from others, support. Like I just remember in my 20s, I couldn't cook at all, but my friends each week would bring me this huge pot of soup. And so I'd be able to eat all things. So that's a really positive completing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. So as Holiness says, circumstances in our lives may frequently change depending on the completing karma that ripens at any time. So, you know, we have this all the time in our lives, don't we? We're sort of up and down. You know, it's good and bad.
It's really up and down.
Yeah, that's what they call the completing karma. So there's also a thing, this is not an uncommon thing. So like, for instance, when we suddenly find ourselves stricken down with an illness or a disease, right? Now you could say, is that good karma or bad karma? So I don't think anybody's going to say, oh, that's good karma. But what they say is, this is good. But why? Because that negative karma has finished. It can't produce a greater effect of suffering. So in the one that you just give it advance, I mean, I've had experiences like that myself. It's a difficult situation. Everyone around me is very upset, right? And I'm not. We're all in the same situation, but because I look at it in a particular way.
But it's still a ripening of a bad karma because it's
a difficult, because we're all there.
Painful situation.
Yeah. But I'm glad that I find myself here. Because that's the end of it. Everyone else is not happy though.
So if you're in a situation and it's painful, so you're thinking, okay, this is ripening of a negative karma. But what you were saying then, what you do with it, you can bring good out of it. But that's you creating new karma.
That's right. You create something new from there. But this effect that you presently have, you're going to go, well, if it's negative, if it's called bad, well, you can't have something good creating something bad or something bad creating something good. That's not on. But how you respond to it, that's where our freedom lies. That thing. So in response to a negative karma, I'm not going to respond badly because I'm just going to create it again. So instead of that, I'm going to take this other viewpoint and say, oh, good. So that's why Lama's opus is, you know, once you learn about karma, cause and effect and thought transformation, then you can look at suffering like ice cream. And that's what they do. It's like, wow, great, it's so good this is happening. You know, and it's like, and you go, why is that, mate?
So you don't freak out at problems, but no, it doesn't mean that there are no problems.
No, well, problems exist in name. You know? We all agree, like, this is a problem. But it's in response to the problem, that's the thing. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, but like the wealth that they have, that's a result of previous positive karma. To have wealth. Because you say, well, with wealth, how do you create wealth? So through generosity. So is generosity a good thing? You say, well, the motivation is good. It's not, this is the difference from the Buddha Dharma, right? So it's not the act, it's the intention. Where previously it was like the act. Right? So you do these good things, that's good karma. And the Buddha went, well, not necessarily, is it?
You can, yeah, because you may have ulterior motives.
Yeah, that's right. And their wealth is not a good thing. So it's not so much like this. This we sort of brought a more subtle presentation to it. We're making karma being the driving force, the intentions for things. And yet they still call these acts karmas. But like I was saying, so the word karma's got sort of, man, we've got potential, seed, all sorts of things.
With this, if you've got a whole lot of money and it's, so that's a, like, say, a positive, completed karma. But again, then it's what you
that's
do
right.
with it.
That's right.
So yeah. If you then use it to practice yet more generosity, you probably get happier. But if you use it to rip people off or be miserly, you're going to turn a good situation into a bad
that's
one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I just had this example in my mind as soon as you start talking about that. So, you know, so this is not uncommon either. So a person could get, you know, some example. Suppose I was to suddenly inherit like $1 million. You go, wow, that's good karma, Eddie. That's a good completing karma. You know, here it is. So now I've got it. Now what am I going to do with it? So I decide $1 million, I should be able to do an incredible drug run with that. Import a good amount of smack into the country with $1 million, right? I've got a good chance of getting away with it. So, you know, so now you go, okay, now is that going to create happiness or suffering? Well, it's got a huge potential to create suffering, isn't it? For other people and for myself. So there you go. Now you have something like this. Like, is it good or bad? Well, that depends. Because it's a new action going to be created from it. Now, when you have these thrown in completing karmas, there's sort of four possibilities for them. So this might help explain some of this material, right? So you can have a virtuous throwing and a virtuous completing karma. So they've got a picture here of a bloke, human being, that's a virtuous throwing karma. And he's winning this race and he's going to be huge accolades and going, wow, look at that. Good health, all these things, it's completing karma. But he's found that he could actually got the money, the parents, all these things that he could engage in athletics. And not only that, but win a race. So his happiness is increased and so forth, but it completes his lifespan as a human being here. Look, for us, we don't want to do that. For us, what's best is to go, let's find a Dharma center, an authentic teacher. If I could find my way to engage in the practices to attain enlightenment, that's the best sort of completing karma. Right? Because it contributes to this life's happiness and other lives' happiness. So we want something like that. But then we've got the virtuous throwing, so he's still a human being, but non-virtuous completing karma. So on the way he ran and perhaps he had a heart attack. or some accident, got hit by a car, some sort of thing happened.
Tripped over something. Broke a bone.
Yeah. So yeah, it's great you're a human, but look what happened. And this is when the answers go, why do bad things happen to good people? So, well, it's a cute, this completing karma. Then we turn around on the other side, right? So the non-virtuous, throwing karma. So what can we be certain about this? What's the fruition or result of non-virtuous throwing karma?
Lower realm
rebirths. So it's going to be animals, hungry ghosts, hell realm beings. So here we've got, the doggy. So he's set up as a doggy, and look, he's terrible. He's got no home, no food, all these sort of things, right?
Lonely.
May even be grabbed and be fed for humans or cats. Terrible life as an animal. But we also know that, you know, there's those little doggies that got looked after by the queen, the corgis. I mean, we've got a couple of cats, they love it. we take them around the stupa, we bless them, we show them all sorts of stuff. Well, we try and imprint their mind with Dharma. That's good. Good completing Dharma for our cats and other animals. So like it's the same with us, right? We want to have the virtuous throne, and the virtuous throne's already taken place for us, but we want to do it again because our death is certain. And we'll have to take another new life. So we want to be thrown into a realm just like this again. But we need to have virtuous completing karma. And so for most of us, for at least 40 years, that was not the case. And same with Miffy's mother. And then something happens. One day you read a book and it's like, wow, and then you meet a lama, and then suddenly you come to these teachings, and your happiness increases exponentially. Suddenly you know the purpose of your life. So, wow, at long last, the completing karma is in place. Or, like I said, it could go the other way. You know, you've got this wonderful completing karma, and you're doing this, and then you do something silly. It don't work out anymore. So there's these four possibilities.
You're saying the completing karma can act within your lifetime.
The completing karma.
Does the seed of the cause of the completing karma, does that come from this lifetime or from?
It could be either.
It could be this lifetime.
Yeah, for sure. And you want to make it this lifetime. You know, so completing karma. You want to do as much as you possibly can. Like I say, what did you say? Don't neglect even the smallest virtue, even the smallest good thing, because it could be a completing karma. So even good, like the sort of things here, you know, when we made these, the wishes, when we dedicated our merit. So it's useful in the sense of being completing karma. Right? So here we are, we find ourselves in samsara still, because it wasn't dedicated to get out. So here we are. And then maybe, so then you live a bit longer, you have a healthy life, all these sort of things, right? They're completing your karma. But we know they could change. So to make wishes and dedicate your merits to end up in cyclic existence is not a good idea. When you do that, what you're saying is it'll be completing karma. And the completing karma is not necessarily always in this realm. It could take place in the animal realms too. That's the thing.
If you make a concerted effort to have virtuous states of mind, does it make it more likely that virtuous completing karma will happen? Or is it
But you know, you've sort of, like, with when you study this material, the Buddha Dharma, suddenly you realize, like, how much you don't know. And one of the things and we don't know a lot about it. In fact, we know very little about it. And it's even hard to know. It's harder to know than the wisdom realizing emptiness. It's karma. That's the hardest, the most difficult topic you'll ever come across in the whole presentation of the Buddha stuff. So much of it just has to be taken on the word of the enlightened beings. Yeah, but wisdom realizing emptiness, but you can sit there and work this out with some help and go, yeah, I get it. Might not be directly, but I understand.
But you can do that with karma too. If you really get the principles, that's the thing.
And that's why it's important to get the principles of it. Right, so you can at least, you know, those four principles. Right? Like I said, the principle of virtue always producing happiness and non-virtue always producing unhappiness. So you know, like if I do something which is virtuous, driven by the intention, the result will be one of happiness. And then you go, what type of happiness? Well, that really depends on the other stuff, right, that you've done. As I said, the actions are made up of parts. And you can see when you understand, like how deliberate you have to be. Like, you know, the fugitives, right? It just slips our mind. And I remember when we go down to West End, there used to be a blind fellow there. And he'd hold his cup out, and I'd go past, and I'd have the money. I'd have to sit there, and I'd stand there, and then go, okay, made this offering, I'll bring about da-da-da-da, bring about enlightenment. And that's not a natural thing to do. And the most natural thing to do is just put the money in and keep walking.
And then maybe dedicate it, but how often do you remember to motivate before doing
it? The simplest thing we do is just do the action. The simplest thing is to perform the action. That's the simplest part. The motivation we often not conscious of, we just do it sort of blindly. We don't have any greater intention than to make the life of a blind person a little better. That's samsaric happiness. No way out for him or for me. We say, let's both stay here, be happy in samsara. And then at the end, we don't go, dedicate it. And yet, one of the things I always say, said again and again, it's like there are two things to remember. It's the beginning and the end, the motivation and the dedication. Because in the middle, we don't do it very well, but we could do those two parts well, and they're the most important parts. But they're the two parts we don't do well. we do the middle. So, and you know, to do anything well, you have to sort of do it consciously. You've got to slow yourself down and, you know, work out what I'm doing. Anybody who's trying to get good at anything, you know, no one's good at the beginning, are they? You have to be quite slow. If you take up any sport, any art, any craft, it's slow. But we have to really slow down. You can't rush it. But like I said, a lot of our virtues, we rush them. We're concerned about the activity of giving or putting your arm around somebody or helping in some way, with the external action. Yeah, this is a thing, right? And that was, you know, this was common. Like I said, the Buddha introduced this thing, karma is intention. And there was always, a major thing is always intend. You know, I intend to get enlightened, so I'll dedicate my activity to enlightenment. So we've got all these different results, as you can see. So here's another way of looking at it. So we've got the ripening result. In those other things, the ripening result was rebirth as a human being and rebirth as a dog. They're the two ripening results, one in the higher realms, one in the lower. Then you get a causally concordant result, which has got two parts, the experience and the behavior. And finally, we have the environmental result. So here, in brief, we can go, here's a ripening result, a fruition, rebirth in the lower realms, right? As a bunny rabbit. I put him up here, with you, like what they say, looking in the headlights,
yeah, frozen. Like the headlights, yeah.
That's right. What's going on? So So three different levels, small, rebirth is at medium, great. This is in terms of the negative activity we've created, left a seed of potential. So then we look at some of these other ones, the two results similar to the cause. Results corresponding to the experiences. So this is referring to that we find ourselves experiencing circumstances which are very similar or like those we created for others. So for example, I'll put this one up here, because, you know, like desirous attachment is one of the biggest things in our realm, especially with human beings. Right? So here we've got this idea, so you, in a previous life, one of these two, one of this couple was a player, cheated on the other. So what do they have in terms of their experiential result? Marital disharmony, disagreements, all these sort of things. So that's the experience of it. But in terms of the behavior, is you just keep doing the same thing. So you keep cheating. So one of the things, so I've done this, I once lived in a household of thieves. And man, these blokes, they're always looking for something to steal. And even when they got caught, something went to jail, they come out again, they do the same thing. So this is kind of what they call behavior. So what it's saying is, when they take rebirth again as a human being, the behavior continues. They keep stealing. What's the experience? Poverty. That's not a poverty mentality. I don't have enough. I need more. Never content with what you have.
And always anxious that someone's going to steal your stuff.
Steal your stuff. That's right.
So really distrustful of others.
Yeah. Well, there she is. Actually, I sort of hid him away there. I wonder if Deb will come out here and take them. And then we get to the environmental result. So like I said, so here we might find ourselves living in terms of the stealing one, living in very, very poor circumstances. So in a place, you know, a lot of sort of danger, often say floods, natural disasters. And so you can see in many ways how an environmental result and a completing result would sort of go together. So this is this, actually I've got, there's a number of books I've got. When you go through all this material, you can sort of start mapping it out. It just gets so huge.
Oh, there's a question here from Ben about, so these are quite obvious, these suffering results, but what? How would someone get born, for instance, in a god realm from the perspective of throwing and completing karma? Because he's curious, because even though it involves less suffering, so it's a higher realm, it's seen as not such a great result because we'd be more distracted from the Dharma, for instance. But what would be the causes for them?
Well, it depends what type of god realm you're talking about. So most of them have to do, you need a great deal of concentration to do that. So that's one of the primary causes of it. You need to have a very concentrated mind to attain that sort of result.
So is it possible to practice Dharma in the god realm?
Yep.
Just like it is in the human realm, but who's interested?
Yeah, that's right. You know, so that's right. So you know, in terms of, and if you looked at what, so one of the things was like, so David Bowie, before he became famous, met a Tibetan master, and actually was engaged in studying Tibetan Buddhism. And he always remained friends with that Lama for all the way through his life. But then, you know, David Bowie became successful as a rock and roll star. And what about the practice? Well, there's no more practice. Well, I'm a rock and roll star. You know, there's things you've got to do, right? You don't have time, all that sort of stuff. So the God realms are sort of like that. Either it's, depending on what God realm you're talking about, most of the time it's that they say, like it's, you don't have enough suffering there to want to practice Dharma. So remember the story about, you know, the great boxers. So there has never, ever been, in the history of boxing, a world champion who's come out of a good household, ever. None. No wealthy, blah, blah, blah. All the greatest boxers in the world have come out of poverty. So in a similar way, you know, like it's like you want to achieve these having the body of a god, being god realm, the mind is not really open to this. Like I said, the suffering is so much less than it is in the human realm. That's why I say the human realm is perfect for engaging the study of Dharma. We get just enough of that suffering, and we have enough freedom to actually want to do something about it. When the lower realms are suffering so great you can't do anything, the higher realms, the pleasure is too good, so you have no interest in it.
Yeah, well, that one scares me as much as the lower realm, because I know when things are going well, how lax I can get.
And yeah, you know, and not only that, they say, so the suffering of some of the god realms, so while you are a god, it's fantastic, depending upon which realm you're in. It's also a fantastic realm, the jealous in the realm, the jealous gods. That's not a good thing.
Pride before a fall as well. Yeah.
So they say, so the suffering of the gods is greater than the beings in the lower realms, because at the moment of their death, they realize it's over. So it's like, you know, imagine if you had billions of dollars and you could
like
do all sorts of
things.
Yeah, that's right. Overnight, it was all gone. And you found yourself on the street in poverty. So the god realms are like that. So it's like, it's all good. But then they have enough foresight at the time of death to go, oh my God, I'm going to be reborn in the lower realms. And they freak out, of course. But what can you do? You can't do anything. It's too late. But Manibin, you need to have calm abiding is the major thing you need, and beyond, to have to take those rebirth states. So let's have a look at, we're going slowly.
7 minutes.
Oh-ho! So here, in brief, I'll just put these up there, right? So when the fruitional result of killing is a lower realm rebirth. In terms of the experiential result, it's a short life. The behavioral result is you keep doing it. And the environment you find yourself in is one of strife. In terms of lying, the fruition is a lower realm rebirth. The experience is to be deceived. The behavior is to keep lying. And the environment is one you find is a fearful one.
Like untrustworthy environment.
Yeah. Wrong views. So wrong views is the heaviest in terms of the mental karmas. Fruition again, lower realms. Experience is to have a real dull mind. Behavior, of course, is just to keep repeating your wrong views and believing in them. But the environment you find yourself in is one of chaos. And of course, like again, you know, just because we're running out of time and so forth, there's a lot of material about this in the books and so forth. Now, what you really want to take away from it, it's like we were talking about last night with our friend Corrie. You know, one of the things I say when you engage in the study of Dharma, or when you start reading about it, is to change your mind. If you don't change your behavior and mind, what's the point? Why not just go to the movies or read something else?
Yes, so Ben, he said, I can see why it's important to combine the skill with the ethics.
Yeah. In fact, Ben, you know, so one of the questions in the refuge module, it says, what is the measure of being a Buddhist? If you are a Buddhist, what does that mean? So some people say, well, you know, you are a Buddhist because you've taken refuge. You go, yep, that's true. But what does it mean for you? What are you to do? And you are a Buddhist if you're acting in accordance with the Buddhist teachings on cause and effect. If you're not doing that, what sort of Buddhist are you? You're a Buddhist in mouth, or by ceremony, or by faith, but you know, it requires that you act. And like Kinsa Rinpoche said, you know, you do a refuge ceremony, but comes up and take refuge, you sit back and look at everybody and says, now I don't think this is the end. He says, now you begin. Now we begin. And it's true, it's like you've made up your mind to become a Buddhist. And you've said to everyone, I'm a Buddhist. And you go, what does that mean? It means to work in harmony with the teachings of cause and effect. And like, why you want to do that? Because you want to put an end to your suffering and liberate yourself. There's no other reason. And the potential is there, the possibility is there, and you see it. That's why you've done it. Now, so when we come to this, the purification work, so when we have the experiences like the cause, that is purified by remorse. The throwing karma is purified by the remedies. The behavior like the cause is purified with resolve. In other words, a decision not to do those actions again. And the fruitional result and the environmental result are relying upon the Buddha as the teacher of refuge and what he taught, karma, cause and effect. Now, that just starts you off as like the normal, that's the beginning. But like I'm saying, that's when you go along, the goal might be greater than liberation. Like I said, if you're thinking, I want to become a Buddha to free everybody from suffering, then of course you've got to work in harmony with cause and effect, because it's not going to happen otherwise. But you've got to add to it this wish, this intention to become a Buddha. So that means you've actually got to practice the six perfections and the four ways of gathering disciples, and then you've got to go into Tantra. It's big. But the baseline, the foundation of it all, is karmic cause and effect. It's been said, ethics, ethical behavior. And understanding the results of when you're unethical, what can happen to you. Here's a brief reflection. He says, so reflect on your life, noting your habitual actions. You go, okay, so how do I behave? What do I normally do? I like to go down the pub for a drink myself. I like to play a little bit of poker. And I like to do this and that. I'd say, well, okay, that's what I do. These are my habitual actions. What are they all involved with? You go, attachment. Gee, you've got a lot of attachment. Oh, yes, I have. What's the result, ripening result of attachment? Anyone? What's the ripening result of attachment?
Desire, wrong.
Rebirth and cyclic existence. That's what keeps you here. It's your attachment. That keeps us all here. None of us likes the suffering of samsara, but we all like the pleasure of it. We're locked in. We lock ourselves in. You know, what are these other results? Well, there's all sorts of rebirth in the lower realms. It's basically suffering. So it's in there, okay. So what's going to happen to you is up to you. If you don't take control over your mind, if you don't work in harmony with cause and effect, well, we know the results. If you do, you know the results too. So have the sense of your life being a conditioned event, and you are the one creating the conditions. it's tremendous, isn't it? Because then we go, wow, I'm the creator, or my karma is the creator of my suffering. But I can stop it. Virtue is the creator of my happiness. I can create more. It's tremendously empowering, this. So now we come to the good stuff.
Oh my God.
And you notice it's only one slide. The love of the Buddha stuff is always on the negative, so just go, look, it's so terrible, don't do it. And that's the idea. Just to go, don't do it, and then don't. So the virtue of restraint is of course, a sentient being in whom you can engender hostility. That's now nearly most people. So what you're going to do is you're going to restrain yourself from doing it. What's the attitude? You've got to know, well, it's this person that I'm not going to harm.
Not going to throw the thing at me.
That's right. Because I want to become enlightened. That's my motivation. And the virtue is mind of enlightenment. So I restrain myself from telling her something that I shouldn't. I don't say anything harsh to her. In fact, I restrain myself from harsh speech and speak pleasantly to her. And the culmination of it is when it's been understood. So again, you could go right back to that material and just go, okay, what do I need to do good? What's the virtue? What's the result of the virtue? All that sort of stuff.
So this isn't even just an outright good deed. This is actually refraining from a negative deed.
That's
as
right.
Being virtuous.
That's right.
Which is kind of good, really.
Oh, yeah.
There's no shortage of these ones.
It's just, and this is where it starts. It just begins with stop. Yeah? What about Reagan's wife, or Nancy Reagan, also? Just say no. And you're right. And this one, you're going to say, yeah, no, I'm not going to create more suffering for myself. I need to create more virtue and more happiness for myself so I can help others. You can always keep coming back, or like I say, or so I can restrain myself from hurting others. I don't have any problems, I don't need to hurt others. I don't have any problems, I want to help others. So go like that. Whoa, we've come to the end. Now your future does depend on the actions you take now. And like I said, with purification, you can look back and like I do, is just be safe about it and go, look, I can't even remember what I did 2 years ago. So talk about countless lifetimes, I've forgotten, but it's probably I've done everything, good and bad. So that bad stuff, I don't want to come to fruition in this life or any life, so I'm going to stop it. But basically what we went through is all the answers to that quiz. So if we were to try and answer them, they're all here. So I hope it's been a little useful to you. It's something you might take away from it and use. If you have questions, please ask them now. So this time we're going to dedicate the right way, aren't we?
Yes.
And we're going to remember that what we've done, the actions we've done, this dedication, the goal we're aiming at, and we exist in mere name. We have no true existence. We exist dependently. And that's why enlightenment can take place. So, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space endures, as long as sentient beings abide, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world.